Welcome down to my 9-foot homemade oak bar. Pour yourself a cold one. You are listening to Bucks in the Basement. My name's Chris, and Craig here is the biggest Pirates fan you'll ever meet. Let's talk Pirates baseball now. Welcome to Bucks in the Basement.
Now I see the changes in this town. They change, they say one thing, but then the next day.
My 9-foot homemade oak bar, my basement. This is Bucks in the Basement. My name is Chris. That's Craig. And friend, I need to ask you one thing. How annoyed are you that when given the opportunity to start getting rid of guys, Ben Cherington essentially gave everybody arbitration and it's like the same team right now?
It absolutely made no sense to me whatsoever, Chris. We've been talking about this for the past couple weeks, and we said that there could easily be 8 to 10 guys cut from this roster today, and I wouldn't even bat an eye.
Right.
And what happens is before arbitration comes in, of course, I think the Steelers were playing, like, they were playing that 3:40, like, Thursday game, like, weird COVID game. And right as it's starting, it's like Eric Gonzalez is signed to a one-year contract again. And everybody's like, oh, yeah, they know when to release their information. And that's exactly... Then we hear Michael Feliz is signed to the one-year deal. Jameson Taillon, smart dude, signed for the same amount. Okay, get that one out of the way. But then you take the rest of the 10 guys, and Gonzalez and Feliz could have been gone, and I could have cared less. But then you take the other 10 guys, and you're just like, yeah, let's go to arbitration. But wait a second. Clay Holmes, you are not arbitration eligible yet, but, you know, we still have to tender a contract because that's what happens on this day. And those guys usually all get tendered their contract. You know what? We're just not going to tender a guy who's, you know, still has time. Let's sign him to a minor league deal like 3 days later and invite him to spring training. I mean, this, I just don't understand what's going on. And then the crazy part, Chris, today, Ashton Goudeau, who we needed to get and to DFA Will Craig, put him on waivers, picked up by the Orioles. So we do have two spots left, but I'm just wondering, what's Ben Cherington doing?
That's the craziest part of the entire thing, that you picked up a guy and then got rid of him, and in the process got rid of Craig. And I'm not going to go back and say that getting rid of Craig is a bad thing. I said it on the last show. He's a dime a dozen type of player. He's never shown anything. If you don't like him, fine. I get it. You're clearing off dead weight. Great. But you're telling me all these other guys aren't dead weight? We went through this. We could find about two or three guys that are really trade bait. Realistically, the rest of these guys are on your squad now. So it's weird. It's almost like, well, we need to have a team. So let's just get a team. Like, maybe that's how he operates. Maybe his thing is like, well, we need to have a team. So let's just have a team. And then I'll start making moves after I have my team. Like, maybe he's like he needs to have it all laid out in front of him. I to me, you could have made some moves. You could have opened some things up. You're not fooling anybody in a trade package who thinks all of a sudden one of these guys is valuable. I mean, at least they moved on from Trevor Williams. But with the exception of that move, there's a lot of things here I thought you could have done to trim some fat off the roster. And you're almost prolonging things now because you're offering arbitration to guys, and then what are you gonna do? You're gonna turn around and when a deal comes along, you're gonna start waiving people. It's weird to me. I don't think that on this 40-man roster, there's more than 30 guys that I really care about. You could have opened things up a little bit more. I'm surprised.
Yeah, it's definitely not what I expected to happen. And like you said, Chris, with Trevor Williams being moved off, that made me think that things were going to be a little bit different, and then they turned out to be a lot the same. And it just was a very strange situation.
Do you think that he really, do you think that the Pirates organization, I mean, this is a legit question at this point. Does the Pirates organization view the team better than we view it? Do they actually think that there's more talent there? Do they look at what's going on in the division and the fact that the Cubs are done? They're clearly done. They don't care. They're moving on, whatever. The Cardinals are in this weird thing where their biggest question is, do we just bring back these really old players and pay them more money than they're worth because of their legacy? So they're looking at that going, well, that's not a lot of competition. And the Reds don't look like they're as scary as people thought they were going to be as they were coming up going into the 2020 season. And you look through this entire division and you go, well, we really don't need to do very much. It's just a free-for-all, and somebody's going to be five games over 500 is going to win, make it into the playoffs as a division winner. Do you really think that's what do you think it's possible Ben Cherington looks at his team and goes, well, you know, it was a crappy 2019. We didn't even really get a 2020, and I need another year to evaluate? Like, what is he going to find that we haven't seen so far?
Even with some of the players, you hear him saying now that, like, Eric Gonzalez, and there's going to be an open competition at shortstop between Eric Gonzalez and Cole Tucker. And I'm like, well, didn't that happen like last year in spring training? And unfortunately or fortunately, didn't Eric Gonzalez win that competition? Like, and I'm not saying that Eric Gonzalez is the answer, but I think that a lot of your questions, like you got Cole Tucker regular bats, but now they're going to say, oh, well, he was learning a new position. So he needs more regular at-bats. I don't know what else you need to see from him. I don't know what else you think is going to happen from Eric Gonzalez. And I understand if you got to field a team, then you got to sign some of these guys, but you have to sign all of these guys? Because they're coming out now, Chris, and saying, you know, to prepare, Manfred's saying to prepare for no DH in the NL, which we had talked about previously. And so we have Moran and Bell at first base. You have Frazier and Newman at second base. Now you have Gonzalez and Tucker at shortstop. You have, you know, Hayes over sitting over there at third. But then, I mean, you have like no outfielders. You have Brian Reynolds, Gregory Polanco, Jared Oliva, and Anthony Alford in your outfield right now. And you have two roster spots open, which I know a lot can change. But to me, you had an opportunity to, I thought this that he saw enough. But when he saw with Trevor Williams, I'm like, oh yeah, he saw enough from this guy. Like, what else do you need to see from some of these other players? I don't get it, Chris. I honestly just don't get it, brother.
To me right now, it almost feels like when you have a bottom-dwelling football team or a team that has a really bad quarterback, but the general manager wants this young rookie to do well, and he wants to put up subpar competition against him, so the rookie has something to go up against, but he really wants the rookie to win. And the Eric Gonzalez thing feels like, oh, well, you know, Cole Tucker should be able to beat him out for the job. So it's almost like don't put anything in there that's scary for Cole. We want Cole to do well. And everybody, I think, knows my feelings and your feelings on Cole Tucker. He's got some great attributes, but he hasn't shown me anything that makes me think superstar. And it's strange because Charrington's not really tied to him, but it almost seems like the move is made to make sure that Cole Tucker has competition, but not too much competition. That's what it kind of feels like. It's weird. It's almost like saying 2021 is a throwaway. The idea is we've got two of everything at every position. We're going to play this thing out and see if any other cream rises to the top, and then we're going to start making moves. Like, look, if you think that you have a core here, then you should be in the free agent market trying to pick up a player or two because you think you're that close to being a playoff team. But I know you don't think you're that close to being a playoff team. So what are you, just in limbo? What is 2021 here? Is it a build? Do you actually think that you already have the pieces? Is Ben Cherington's legacy, is the way he sees it as, well, you know, I took over, but I think the guy beforehand was doing such a great job, I don't want to change a thing, and I'm going to build off of this core? Because that's surprising to me. You would think any GM that came in would be like, this is the perfect opportunity to get the kind of players I want and put those kind of players in. And instead, he's almost like a guy who's filling the office and making minor moves, but I haven't seen anything big yet. I want him to do something at some point. I want him to trade a piece to pick up players, or I want him to decide some of this stuff isn't, some of these guys aren't major league caliber players, or I want him to make some other move other than, you know, a weird waiver move that he picks up for depth and draft picks. Maybe I'm an impatient person, but he's not doing enough for me. You know, I get muscle aches all the time. I've gone from being able to do whatever I want to and not feeling any pain to basically getting pain for any kind of physical activity. Good news, there's a local family-owned Southside business that provides a CBD topical that will not break the bank. Creaky Bone Balm offers concentrated relief for creaky bones. It is an effective hemp-based CBD in a rejuvenating balm. And guess what? It's made in small batches, always free of preservatives, and all natural ingredients. It's great for muscle aches, tension, inflammation, joint pain. You can even use it for skin ailments like burns and dry, cracked skin. Right now, go to creakybone.com and use the promo code BASEMENT. Get 20% off your order. Whether it's physical activity or off-season stress, Creaky Bone's gonna help you out. Use that promo code BASEMENT, 20% off your order right now at creakybone.com.
I am refusing to call it the Rule 5 draft at this point. I'm going to start calling it the Rule 5 process, Chris. And why I'm going to call it the process is once you start mentioning draft to anybody, they're like, oh, we need to go get this guy. We need to go get that guy. And I'm like, that's not how this works. I'm like getting so frustrated with people.
You talk to too many stupid people.
No, I just
stop talking to stupid people. Ignore the dumb ones in your Twitter timeline. Knock it off. Stop talking to stupid. If you don't understand what the Rule 5 draft is, let's explain it. Let's explain what the Rule 5 draft is. You want to go through it? You want to just explain it to people?
I think we've already gone through and explained it to people, but they just don't understand it.
It's a pool of players that have been held by a team for a certain period of time, and that if the team has not elevated them to their 40-man roster and they're sitting in limbo in the minor leagues, they have rights as players to be able to get off of that team or get out of that organization if somebody drafts them away from them. But you have to be a certain age and be down in that system for a certain amount of years. Then there's a player pool. If somebody selects you, then you have to stay in the major leagues for the entire season the next year, or the other team can buy you back for, I think, like $25,000.
There's $100,000 and then $50,000 to buy him back.
Okay, whatever it is. But I'm just trying to do it off the top of my head instead of looking it up online and explaining it. But that's what it is. So it's not like there's great talent out there. You're trying to find some team that couldn't hold on to a prospect and had to pick between three guys that are pretty much the same, and your system sucks so badly that you'll pick that guy up and deal with his problems for an entire year because you're going to have to develop him at the major league level to be able to hold on to him. That's all the Rule 5 draft is. You do not make hay in the Rule 5 draft.
And I think that's where, like, where Pirates fans like start to grasp onto anything, because it's like, oh, well, there's something that's going to be happening, because so far nothing has happened. So, I mean, other than, you know, making the Starling Marte trade and getting in two decent prospects, having a fairly good draft is what we've talked about. Then, you know, getting rid of Jerod Dyson for some international bonus space and picking up some international players. So there has been movement made. It's just, I thought there would be more movement, even though he kept on calling it a build and building the minor league system. I thought there would be more moves in the major league team in attempt to make that happen. And I think that's maybe my fault for overvaluing our players, that I thought we could make more trades. But at this point in time, I mean, you're being told there's no DH. You have Moran and you have Bell. We talked about this as soon as the season was over. You asked me this question.
You can't keep them both.
You can't keep them both.
No.
You can't keep them
both.
It
doesn't make any sense to keep them both. Because here's the thing. People sit there and say, well, you know, why not? Why not just hold on to as much talent as you had? Well, what are you going to do? One of them's going to barely play, so it's not like there's going to be any growth. Or you're going to split their time, and you're not going to get anybody on a hot streak because you're never going to give them a chance to get regular playing time. You can't have a whole team of guys being platooned. I brought up the top 10 Rule 5 draft picks since 1990 for you, just to kind of illustrate the luck you need to have in the Rule 5 draft. Okay?
I appreciate this.
Of the names kind of pop out, and some of them I'm like, okay, well, let's see. Graham Lloyd is the 10th best since in the last 30 years. He was a Rule 5 selection, Phillies from the Blue Jays in December of 1992. He actually pitched in 568 games, 533 innings as a left-handed specialist in his career. The ninth highest guy is Scott Pesednik, who took forever to develop, had a lot of speed, could play defense, couldn't hit. Taken by the Rangers in 97, he's Rule 5 drafted by the Brewers in 02, has a breakout season in 03, goes to the White Sox in a trade, has a walk-off home run in Game 2 of the World Series, and was designated for assignment only a few years later. So you're looking for flashes in the Rule 5 draft. That's the ninth best. Jay Gibbons is number 8. Miguel Batista was a Rule 5 draftee. He was actually selected by the Pirates from the Expos in 1991 and then returned by the Pirates because he couldn't hang on the team returned to the Expos later on. Shane Victorino is the sixth best. He's been Rule 5'd multiple times in return until it finally worked out for him. Remember, I think he was like 30 years old when he had his first like full season. Willie Taveras was number 5. Frank Calinato was number 4. Fernando Vina was number 3. Dan Uggla, remember him? There's a reason why, because he couldn't play defense, and eventually somebody was like, I'll put up with it. But he was a Rule 5 draft pick. The number 1, this one is what you're looking for. This is what you're panning for gold. Maybe every once in a while you get a guy drafted by the Astros, picked up by the Marlins in the 1995 Rule 5 and then traded to the Twins just so they didn't have to return him back. And he goes on to have a spectacular career. Can you name that pitcher?
Is that Johan Santana?
That is Johan Santana. That's the best one in 30 years. Now, he was good, but it's very rare.
Yeah.
It's very, 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 very rare. If I go through the list of all the other Rule 5 draft picks that didn't make it on here, you'd laugh your ass off, and it would take forever for me to read it.
Yeah, and I did a piece on the Rule 5 draft, and I basically said the last time the Pirates did this, they returned the guy when they had somebody in, like, the first round. And their last success story was Evan Meek, which was, like, back in, like, God knows when that was, like, 10 years ago, 15 years, whatever it was. So it's and by success, he had a couple good years with the Pirates. Like, it's not like you're finding your future catcher, your future number one ace in this Rule 5 draft. So I'm at this point, Chris, like I said, I'm just kind of ready for it to be over so then people can go, who, when they pick him, and then complain, but not really understand the actual process. That's why it's the Rule 5 process for me anymore.
Listen, man, I'm going backwards in time. There's nobody notable in 2019 that panned out for anybody. There's nobody notable in 2017 or 2018 that panned out for anybody. I just got to 2017 and I'm flipping through it. Victor Reyes was picked up by the Tigers, number 1 in the Rule 5 draft. That worked out. And Nick Birdie was a Rule 5 pickup by the Phillies, who was then traded to the Pirates. They grabbed him from the Twins. So yeah. I had to go back 3 years to find two names that jumped out at me. Everybody else, I'm not. Brad Keller. Remember that? He's over there in Kansas City. 2017, he was a Rule 5 draft pick. But the thing is, the teams that grab these Rule 5 guys are terrible teams that are in the basement that have to sit there and deal with that guy all year long to hold on to him. The Pirates are in a great position to go do that, but what's going to be out there really that they think they can develop? Because trust me, I just went back. It took 3 years to find a couple of names that actually resonated with me.
Yeah, and one right now that is working out.
Yeah, I mean, there were something like 50 draft picks over the last 3 years. Quick look at it. Maybe 50 guys were taken in the last 3 years. And there were three names that jumped out to me, and they were from 3 years ago. And they're not great players. I mean, Nick Birdie, did that pan out? Didn't pan out. So, I mean, it's just we recognize his name. Victor Reyes has been okay. Brad Keller is owned by multiple teams in his own division and isn't that great. He just happens to be a starter on a really bad team. And I just recognize those names. I'm not saying they're great. So it is a crapshoot, and you're lucky to find any kind of value. We spent enough on the Rule 5 draft. It's going to happen this week, and I doubt that it's going to improve the Pirates exponentially. So stop worrying about it, everybody.
Yeah, and I mean, we do have the extra spot open there. So now people are thinking, you know, is that two Rule 5 picks? Which we talked that the Orioles did that, and one of the guys made it onto their team. The other guy they sent back, and he pitched terrible. So there you go.
I bet you there isn't one second round Rule 5 draft pick that has panned out in 30 years. It would take me a long time to go up, but I mean, right now, if somebody sat there and said, bet me $100 if there was a quality second round Rule 5 draft pick that panned out, I'd probably take that bet.
And I think more at this point in time, it's just trying to figure out exactly, like we said before, what Ben Cherington's going to do with this roster. He's saying that he wants to go and get an outfielder. Once again, I mean, last year, we go out and get Jerod Dyson. Do I see him going out and getting an outfielder who's much better than Jerod Dyson? No. If this is his plan for the team right now, and we have 38 guys on the roster right now, and it's pretty much thrown out there, the same team, minus Trevor Williams, I mean, why would you spend money on somebody at this point in time if it looks like your goal is to lose 100 games?
Well, that's the other weird thing. I don't care if your goal is to lose 100 games, fine. You can do that and still start picking up pieces. You know, I don't know if you need to keep all those guys and tender all those contracts. Like, in reality, if you want to lose a ton of games, don't keep Adam Frazier. He's actually talented. You know, I mean, I don't think that he's somebody that was probably worth the money, but he's actually talented. So there's some weird oddities right now in the moves that are being made or the lack of moves. Because to me, if you really want to lose some games, open up some spots in that roster, start going after some guys that fall through in waivers because you're developing for the future. And you're like, well, that guy maybe is a year or two away, but we could fix him.
Yeah.
Take your run at those guys now. My thing is, what do you not know about the players on your team that you haven't learned in the last year? Even with a shortened season, you've been around them. You got a scouting department that's seen them. Even before Ben Cherington, a lot of these people saw him. It's almost like Ben Cherington saying, whatever I learned this year doesn't matter. I'm sure that Nutting is amongst the list of owners that don't want to spend any money because they're poor because of the COVID crisis. So there's a lot of owners that are crying poor. I'm sure he's right there beating the drum next to him. So he's going to be like, well, I can't afford anything. Fine, I understand that. But if you're going to have a down year where you don't spend any money and all these guys are going to be a year older, then it's time to start sorting things out and trying to find those pieces that'll help you later on. I don't think there's a lot of trade pieces here for this team. Unless Ben Cherington can prove me wrong by looking like a guy who can sell snow to an Eskimo, I don't see enough here for you to start picking things up. And it's not like the winter meetings are that much fun this year. These guys are all on Zoom calls. They're not in the room with each other. There's no difference to this week than any other week. So it's just really boring December off-season baseball. And I just thought we'd see, drop a few players and grab a few other players that were left unprotected or were waived. There were a few names out there, but I didn't see that movement, and that's what bothered me.
Yeah, and like we said, Chris, before the show when we were talking here, is you can't be sitting down next to the other GM at a bar tonight at about 11 o'clock having, like, your third or fourth scotch, and it was like, hey, remember when I talked about this guy, you know, a couple weeks ago? Like, what will you give me for him? And just start tossing some of those ideas around here. I mean, I know there's been some trades. I know that, you know, the Reds just traded their closer, Iglesias. They traded him to the Angels. Got back another reliever. It's got a little bit more control. You know, the Angels are trying to shore up that bullpen. But it's not like, if people are going nuts about that type of move, like, that's not a big move.
The big moves aren't coming. Nothing. It's going to be a slow off season. You know, I also kind of find it funny if there's Pirates fans that are out there going, oh, well, he's going to go hit the free agent market and go get a really good outfielder. Well, a couple outfielders shook loose and were waived by teams. He had the room to grab one of them. He chose not to. Eddie Rosario was floating out there. He ain't going to go pick him up. There is a few outfielders that shook loose because teams were either shedding payroll or deciding they were going to let another rookie into that spot, or they didn't want to tender a guy a contract. But there were guys who were out there that you could have very easily gotten control of. Instead of having to do the dance of, hey, do you want to come play for the Pirates and get underpaid? You could have just snagged Eddie Rosario and just done his tender, right? You could have done his arm tender. You could have taken two or three players that you didn't really care about, non-tendered them, and then picked him up on waivers and gone through the arbitration process with a guy that has gotten MVP votes for the last 2 years and had rookie of the year votes when he first came along and has an OPS that sits in the high 800s and hits about 30 home runs a year. You could have added that kind of offense to your team, and he was just floating out. You weren't even interested in him. So when he sits there and he says, I want to add this, I want to add that, all right, that's great, but it seems to me like it's going to be like what you said, more of a Gerard Dyson, than actual something of substance, which is, you know, pick a lane. You're either in a rebuild, so start shedding the fat, or you actually want to win, so start adding some players. We're in limbo. It's weird. I wanted more, and maybe we're overreacting, but it felt like nothing happened, and I still can't get a read on what this team is doing at all.
And like you said, Chris, you made the perfect point there is if you wanted to pick up one of these guys, and even if it wasn't, you know, somebody like Rosario, there was guys that were even a little bit cheaper than that but we've said you could have shed 8 guys off of this team and not even blinked an eye, and you don't want payroll to go up. And the crazy thing is, if you don't want payroll to go up, why are you tendering all these arbitration eligible players who are due at least, like, say, $800,000 to $1 million, when you could have filled that spot with guys who are due like rookie level contracts and are making half that
amount? And you're easily going to win. You're easily going to lose 100 games that way if that's what your plan is. So it's weird. See, that's the thing. I think that's what I can't wrap my head around. If you need a lower payroll and you need to save money now and you want to lose games so you get high draft picks because you're in the middle of a rebuild, why tender all these guys? If you're in the process of actually tendering them because you want to have a better product on the field, then you need to go and improve because you're not good enough to do anything with this team. But instead, what you've decided to do is just sit in the middle. I mean, look, Stallings is your catcher. You have at first base 2 first basemen. Bell and Moran are first basemen. You have 2 of them, all right? At second base, you have Frazier and Newman, essentially, as your second baseman. And don't forget about Philip Evans, who is still somebody that might be of interest to you. You have 3 second basemen on this team. Cabrian Hayes is your third baseman, although they might mess around with his time and let Colin Moran play it for a little bit. But he's coming up sooner rather than later. Shortstops Cole Tucker and Eric Gonzalez.
Gonzalez, yeah.
Fighting for that job. Left field is Reynolds. He's the only guy that really isn't in a fight. You went and you grabbed Anthony Alford, so you're probably thinking about putting him in center. And in right field, you got Gregory Polanco. Ooh, this strikes fear into my heart if I'm an opposing team. So the thing is, like, if you're not trying to win it, then you shed some of that money, you use it for other things in your budget, and you let younger kids play. And who cares if they win or they lose, because you're not trying to win anything this year. It's strange. To me, the whole thing is weird. I can't figure it out.
Yeah, and that's why, I mean, I think that we push for, like, you know, well, Adam Frazier has to be a trade piece because why else would he be on the team? Like, Colin Moran or Josh Bell has to be a trade piece because why would we have both of those guys on the team?
Why would you keep them both on the team? Right, exactly. Why would you keep them both on the team? What would be the point of that?
But yet we only hear Joe Musgrove's name, Stephen Brault every once in a while, Richard Rodriguez every once in a while, maybe a Chad Kuhl here and there. You don't hear Bell's name that much. You don't hear Moran's name. You don't hear Frazier's name.
So far, all you've seen the Pirates indicate they're doing, take out all the speculation and what we think they should do, what have we actually seen them do? They've experimented with Brian Reynolds in center field and decided, nope, forget that. We're going to try Anthony Alford out next year, and we're going to pick up a fourth outfielder to go with Reynolds, Alford, and Polanco next year to try to figure out what's going on in our outfield. That's their plan in the outfield. Their infield is going to be the exact same thing that they've always done for the last 2 years. They're just taking the same players and still waiting on development and everything to click there. And their pitching staff is, Tyon's coming back, so get rid of Williams. That's what the Pirates are at this point.
Yeah.
And what is that? Because 2019, they weren't good enough. And 2020, they weren't good enough. And 2021, they're not good enough. So if you're not good enough and you're building, then why are you allocating your resources to guys that might actually ruin your draft position? And why are you allocating your resources money-wise towards certain guys when you could lose more games and use the money to pick up players that you need to get? Why aren't you saving money so that you can go spend it on something else that you want to go and get, that you want to develop? It's strange to me. Unless there's a flurry of trades over the next 2 months, which I don't see how they're going to do, unless they're doing something drastic and they're trading players that we haven't thought about, or they have packages, or they have conversations going on that we haven't seen. I don't know what they're doing. They're an inactive team.
Now I see the changes in this town. They change, they say one thing, but then the next day.